Hello, Humanity First community, and welcome back to the Leading for Children podcast. I'm Julia Connolly, your co-host, alongside Nicole Parks, who will be joining me here shortly. At Leading for Children, we're driving a movement to cultivate collaborative communities of empowered and nurturing adults. Because when we are thriving, we can be who children need us to be so that they can thrive. In our last two episodes, we talked about living our values and setting intention, which are two really important conversations within this larger picture of how do we find our sense of inner harmony so that we feel more well and we can show up for those around us. Before we jump into today's episode about emotional regulation, which I'm excited about, we have a lovely guest who I'm only a little bit biased about for reasons I'll share in a moment. I'd like to invite us to transition into this space together. If you're familiar with how we have conversations at Leading for Children, we use a four-part structure, and this supports the whole group in showing up together with presence and agency. In this first part, set intention, we take a moment to find our footing, so let's do that now. I invite you to close your eyes if that's comfortable, and take a deep breath. Notice what you're carrying. What's in your mind? What's on your heart? What's in your body? Maybe check in with your feet on the floor if you're sitting, standing, laying down. And go ahead and ask yourself, what am I needing right now? And whatever it is, I want you to hold on to it as you're listening in. See if you can use it to support you in finding some grounding and fuel as you transition from this conversation to the rest of your day. So let's jump back in. As I mentioned, today we're talking about emotional regulation, and oh my goodness, does that feel necessary? Life is really hard, and the only thing that we have control over, no matter what, is our emotional regulation. So as we transition into the next part of our conversation, connection, I would love to bring Nicole in and introduce you to our guest, Dr. Jennifer Rocks, who happens to be my mother. She's also a clinical psychologist, and she is here today to share her expertise and perspective on emotional regulation, and also a little bit about how it shows up in her life. Nicole, can I invite you to get us started?
Hello, everyone. My name is Nicole Parks. I am a mother, a grandmother, an aunt to many nieces and nephews, and also the youngest in my family, which I'm realizing more and more that that has a dynamic too. I am also the executive director at Leading for Children, and I am excited for the conversation today. And Jennifer, I'd love to pass it to you to introduce yourself.
Thank you so much, Nicole. I'm really happy to be here. I am Dr. Jennifer Rocks, and I am a mother. And that's probably one of my biggest pieces of my identity, the one that I have a lot of passion and heart with. I am a sister of a brother who is no longer with us. I am a daughter. I am a niece. I am a community member. I am a friend. I'm a nature lover as I sit and look out into the trees in my yard. And as a professional, I am a licensed clinical psychologist in private practice.
Thank you both. I am Julia Connolly, and I think if you listen to the podcast regularly, you might know my voice. I am a daughter, a big sister. I really like that title. I am a granddaughter and friend and community member. At LFC, I am communications and program leader, and I am so happy to be with you both today. I would love to get us started. I feel a little weird saying mom on the podcast, but I guess I'll say mom because that's who you are to me. That would be the humanity first approach. So mom, can I invite you to help us get this conversation around emotional regulation started with your background in neuroscience? I know you have a lot of practice sharing the mechanics, breaking it down with your patients and making it feel accessible. So if you could do that here for our audience, that would be lovely.
Sure. Thank you, Julia. I do love to share a little bit about the science of how our brain works and how it impacts our bodies and our behaviors and our feelings, because I think that can be really empowering when it's not a mystery of what's happening. It gives us a sense of agency or engagement with what's happening inside of us. And so when I think about emotion regulation, what I believe is happening inside of us is that it's that fight or flight system going off when we get activated. And I like to use the word activated over triggered because it is a less violent word. And so that is something that I feel intentional about. When we are activated by some usually external stimulus, but it could be an internal stimulus too, what happens in our body is that the sympathetic system becomes aroused and sends off the alert system. So inside of us, it shoots off all of the adrenaline and cortisol and the chemicals and floods our brain and kind of cuts off our access to the prefrontal cortex, which is like the executive functioning. And it tells our body, fight, flight, faint, or freeze. And sometimes people include fawn as well. Fighting would be characterized not necessarily always as a literal, like put up your fists and physically engage, but it can be like a verbal defense that could include, you know, throwing daggers or what some people would call lashing out or, you know, really trying to hurt the other person with our words in an attempt to protect ourselves. Flight could mean, I just want to get out of here. I'm gone. I'm out. I want either to physically remove myself from the situation or I'm going to emotionally and mentally check out. And fainting too, you know, just if we have a physiological response, our bodies just shut down and we physically get flooded with all of those stress hormones and chemicals that make us unable to engage. And it could literally mean pass out or more like we just can't think. And that's also related to freezing. I'm stuck. I'm shut down. I'm maybe physiologically stiff. I feel tight in my body. I don't have the capacity in some way to engage. And then the fawning is where you might defer to the other person and sort of give up your own position in order to placate, to people please, to soothe that person instead of soothing yourself, trying to change that person's behavior. So when the sympathetic system becomes aroused, one of those mechanisms can be our body's way of automatically showing up to protect us. And we learn these different strategies or mechanisms through experience over a lifetime of what has worked for us and what hasn't worked for us. And we get conditioned by repetition or the environment around us, you know, which one of those seems to keep us the safest. So when we're in that state of arousal, like I said, it's very automatic or reflexive or habitual, and we don't necessarily take time to pause and think and stop and consider and reflect. And what we want to learn to do with emotion regulation is at that point when we discover, when we notice, and we can talk about this more later, but we notice by engaging in mindfulness practices, we become aware of what's happening in our body. Oh my gosh, I'm really activated right now. What are my choices? And that's when we want to engage the parasympathetic system, right? The other side of the sympathetic system. We want to activate to help soothe the sympathetic arousal. If you have a safe relationship with your parent, I think of it as like the parent system comes in and soothes and calms and comforts and helps that child to regulate. When it's our adult selves, we have to do that for ourselves. And so the way that we engage the parasympathetic system is first to recognize that this is happening. So to become aware that I'm in the middle of this situation and then take a breath. And it can be a bit cliche, you know, in our culture, we say, just, you know, chill out, take a breath, you know, relax, come on. But the science of that is that the oxygen molecules brought in by the breath go up into the brain and switch off the sympathetic system and switch on the parasympathetic system, inviting all of those chemicals to recede and withdraw and settle and dissipate so that we regain engagement with our prefrontal cortex, which is that executive functioning center, allowing us to think more logically and have choice. And when the system starts to become more physiologically regulated through bringing the breath in, then we can start to use our cognitive processes, you know, thinking strategies to kind of find out what else is going on here. So the way I think about it is pause, breathe, experience, and then we have some choices. So we go, okay, pause. What is happening here? I'm identifying that I'm in the middle of this activation. I breathe and I bring some breath in to regulate that nervous system arousal. Then the oxygen will work internally as I maybe put my hand on my heart or on my solar plexus and just kind of hang out with myself and experience what is happening inside of me. Oh, wow, my chest is really tight. Oh my gosh, I'm clenching my fists. Wow, my jaw is really working it right now. I'm sweating. You know, whatever is going on, we take time to experience ourselves. Some other language like Kristen Neff and Tara Brach would say, investigate what's going on for you. I think of it as experience yourself with curiosity. So the important piece of it is not to just experience yourself and then beat yourself up for what's happening, but to be aware of the internal dialogue that you're engaging in as you are experiencing yourself. So if your thoughts are coming in and just really clobbering you with, oh my gosh, I'm such a bad person. I shouldn't have done that. Why did I say this? How did I get myself here? And that inner critic comes up and starts really gnawing away. That can add insult to injury, right? And then that hurts. And then it can elicit shame and other things. And it gets in the way of that investigative process where we're trying to be curious and find out what is happening to me in this moment. Am I really being threatened? Does this remind me of how I was treated as a child? Is it a perceived threat to my safety or is it an actual threat to my safety? And can I slow down and be curious and then hold myself gently in this process with, you know, kindness, compassion, self-soothing in some way, nurturing in some way, but says, okay, like it's understandable that I'm feeling this right now. I'm okay, I'm safe, and I'm interested in finding out more about what's happening for me and more about what's happening for the other person.
Thank you for that, Jennifer. I think it was such an important step for us to take, describing how these systems work, because so much of what we do is in service of young children, and these are the skills, the strategies, the behaviors that we want young children to develop. And oftentimes the adults in these young children's lives don't necessarily understand how their own system around regulation works. So I think stopping to just say, here's what's happening, is such a critical step in today's conversation. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It reminds me exactly what you're saying, Nicole. Happens with me and my youngest son. We both are very passionate people and we both really love a good verbal joust and debate. And what I find is that there's a point where it stops being enjoyable and it starts becoming adversarial. And because of, you know, his age and stage of development, he can just kind of keep going, ratcheting up and up and up into the, I have to win, I have to be right. Now there's a lot at stake and my ego is invested and all of that. And so, you know, it's really easy to get sucked into that when you're working with a child of any age or even an adult who is not regulated, right? Because their energy really can destabilize us. So if we have this practice in place for ourselves, I am so aware of how when I stay grounded and when I stay in my center of alignment, it helps him to stay in his. And if he gets off in his, I can use mine to help him co-regulate or to model, set that example. Like if I'm not getting sucked into the heated energy of the moment, then it helps him to not feed off of that. And so it really, to me, feels so much better in my nervous system and in my body and in our relationship.
Thank you for sharing that, Mom. I am laughing because I have been both a witness and a disgruntled yet amused participant in those conversations with you and him, and mostly him, and, you know, have a love-hate relationship with them, as we often talk about. So thank you for sharing about that. And now that we're all holding both a more objective understanding of what emotional regulation is and how it works, and now a little bit of insight into how it can show up in our lives, I'm wondering if we could each share a little bit about our personal, individual relationships with this concept and how we came to learn it, what it means to us, how it shows up in different parts of our lives, you know, in parenting and being a leader and friendship, things like that. So, Nicole, could I invite you to get us started?
I think for me, it just starts with recognizing you have to do the work. Earlier, I introduced myself as the youngest in my family, and that shows up in multiple ways. And just recognizing at a very young age, I did not like the feeling of being out of control. For me, it was very scary to not be in control of one's feelings. And so for a long time, I just learned to suppress them. Just don't feel them. There you go. That's the solution. And so as an adult, I think that's really how it showed up and started. Just do the work. Really, I feel like cultivating self-awareness and doing that work has been real powerful for me. And what it allows me to do as a parent is, I call it keeping my stance, right? Like, it allows me to really keep going back to what's my stance. And my stance is to be as regulated as possible. And in those moments that I'm not, to be self-aware enough to either do the exploratory work of what's happening with me, or sometimes that means just pausing and saying, in this moment, I just cannot get it together, meaning I can't self-regulate. So I'd like to invite us to pause here. Give me a moment, please, to self-regulate. And that shows up in my personal, my professional life as well. The language might change depending on the setting, but the message is always the same. So I think for me, that's the most consistent way it shows up in my practice, is that it's always at the forefront of my mind, because there's external things you can never control. There are internal things that you can manage. And so that's where I practice that.
Nicole, I think you're spot on with that, the piece about awareness. And I related a lot to what you said about your place in the family, your role, not liking to feel out of control of your own internal experience when maybe there's chaos going on outside of you. And in the family systems, you know, there's often a person who kind of holds that centerpiece of peacekeeper, right? The person who plays the role of peacekeeper or wanting harmony. And exactly what you're saying, similarly with me, I learned that my feelings weren't important to people. My whole range of experience was not interesting or important to other people. And what I got praised for or valued for was being regulated and, you know, being calm and being compliant. And so, again, similarly to you, I just learned to shut myself down, you know, shut down the things that hurt and not deal with them. And then, you know, you get to be an adult and you're like, uh-oh, I'm a little bit numb. What's going on here? You know? And so then it becomes a process, like you said, of discovery and self-awareness around, how did I become this way? And how do I gain access to all of me? And that all of me matters. All of my whole experience matters. Like, even the ones in our society we call bad or negative feelings, I really try not to label feelings as good or bad or right or wrong. They just are, right? And they inform us. Our feelings, our emotions inform us about what's okay and what's not okay for us. And I think it's really, really important, especially working with little kids, to let them know that what they're feeling, it matters. Their feelings matter. They are important. And, you know, we get so many messages like, you know, go to your room and pull yourself together and come out when you can stop crying. Or, you know, if you're going to cry, I'll give you something to cry about. And those messages just, they hurt. And they tell us not to trust ourselves. They get in the way of our relationship with ourselves. And then we grow up and we get into relationships thinking that I have to hide these parts of myself because they're not desirable to other people. But then in our relationship with ourselves, we feel really disconnected from our whole experience, and it can limit our ability to be fully present or fully engaged or have deeper, richer, perhaps more intimate relationships. We've thought that those parts of us weren't good, they weren't valuable, they weren't praised, they weren't welcomed.
Yeah, mom, you talk about that experience of growing up and feeling like the grown-ups around you weren't willing to or interested in holding all of your emotions and all the things you learned in your household. And it is interesting, and I say this with all of the love and all of the care and understanding, and of course we've had lots of conversations about this, it's so interesting how that gets passed down. And because we know it was a value of yours that you learned in your household to be regulated and manage your stuff and not make it someone else's problem, that showed up in our household, you know, not at all with any bad intentions. It was like a positive thing to be regulated. And sometimes it's at a point where you start to feel disconnected to yourself, like you're talking about, and suddenly aren't able to recognize your own emotions and don't trust that someone else can handle them, and it can interfere with your relationships and your family. So I definitely relate to, you know, feeling like emotional regulation was this super important skill. And I do have this great sense of pride and ownership and believe it's a superpower. I like that it feels organic to me as a skill, and at the same time, I'm learning in my own life experiences, in my own therapy, that emotional regulation's also been this defense mechanism or protective feature. I believe that if I'm regulated, I can handle anything that comes at me. You know, I've had enough interactions in my lifetime so far where I feel like the other person became so dysregulated that there wasn't space for me to have my own experience. And in those situations, I couldn't even think about not being regulated, you know, because not only am I regulating for myself, but I feel like I'm regulating that other person so I don't get hurt. So there are all kinds of experiences, of course, that we all have where we're learning lessons about whether or not it's important to practice emotional regulation, whether or not we're good at it, and that's part of our identity. And it's just so interesting how you learn it over time, and then as you start to strive for different kinds of relationships or to be a different kind of way in the world, you start to challenge your experiences and relationship to emotional regulation.
Thank you for sharing that, Julia. It made me think about developmentally appropriate practice, and there's three core considerations, and the third is context, and that's really understanding the context that children or a particular child has grown up in and recognizing that children learn messages deeply. It's like just embedded into us at a very young age in those lessons, whether spoken or modeled, they really take root in us. And so it's understanding that the child's experiences from the social cultural context, which I believe cultural context has a big play into messages about self-regulation as well, that even without being aware, we can begin to own some of those things. And I think that's why conversations like these among the adults in children's lives are so important, because you unconsciously sometimes model the same thing that you found to be an impediment to you. So I appreciate you saying that. I know that played out true in my home as well.
Yeah, there's definitely something to being a woman, being, you know, all the identity things that we take on and the way that we're socialized, of course. For me, I identify with being the oldest daughter, and I felt a responsibility that I don't think my little brothers felt. They had more space to be expressive and have a full range of emotions, and it was expected of them. It wasn't strange or off-putting or a burden to anyone else, because that's just what they were expected to do, how they were expected to be. And, you know, when I was little, I didn't understand that it was happening. I didn't have the words to know, I feel like I'm not allowed to be this way, or I feel like the other person isn't willing to hear that. But you feel it, like you're saying, Nicole, and it is in your atoms, in your cells. It is energetic. It is in you at the very most basic level. And I appreciate you bringing that perspective in too.
The beautiful thing is, as the adults in children's lives, we have the power to disrupt that. If we're willing to have conversations like these, and if we're willing to do the work, an example I use is I have three adult children, and then I have the 14-year-old. And being a woman of color, being from the South, you know, always be a lady, whatever that means. There were certain messages, and being quiet keeps you safe, you know, from a cultural context. And so with my older children, especially my daughters, I would kind of suppress their boldness, their courage, even their voice level, you know, I would police. And thankfully, in doing this work, I recognized some of the things that influenced my showing up that way from my childhood. And so my 14-year-old has a very different experience when it comes to the things that I model around self-regulation. I don't monitor her tone. Respect always, always. You can speak your mind. I don't care who it is. Your thoughts, your opinions, they matter. And it's not your job to make sure that they're okay with me. You don't have to make them palatable to me. I just need you to share them in a respectful way. And that feels empowering as a parent, as an educator, as a community member. And what I would really invite the audience and us to hold on to is that we do have the power to dysregulate some of the myths, some of the mystery, and even some of the suppression of emotional regulation.
Absolutely. I like that, Nicole. And a couple of things came up for me as I was listening to you speak. One of them, and Julia, I kind of grabbed on this with you too, is that if we are shutting ourselves down and not speaking our minds and not sharing what is true for us, we're not really engaging honestly in relationship with ourselves or the other person. And so I've really grabbed this phrase, like, what is true for you right now? And can I share that with you? And I don't know if you want to call it radical honesty or the willingness to be vulnerable and to share. Another word that has become a part of my practice, particularly with couples, is reveal. Are you willing to reveal what is happening inside of you in this moment as you are processing our conversation? Can you share that with me? And can you let me know how you're thinking about and feeling and experiencing this dialogue right now? Can you let me in on your process with honesty, not curated? You know, when we curate this polished image of ourselves, again, it can limit and get in the way of depth of connection. Sometimes if we're confusing emotion regulation with that suppression that we talked about, the shutting ourselves down, the not actually feeling, the not actually revealing, I think it's just really good to have the dialogue about what's the difference between being regulated and sharing versus what is shutting ourselves down, suppressing, containing, controlling in some way. Because I would also have to say that there are times when I've gotten feedback that when I perceived myself to be emotionally regulated, the other person said, well, I can't feel you. You're like so cool, calm, and collected that it doesn't feel trustworthy. It almost felt like destabilizing to them because I wasn't maybe being honest. I was just trying to manage them through my regulation. Like if I could stay regulated, it was more of an effort to protect myself than to engage honestly.
Yeah, this makes me think about a conversation you and I just had, Mom, about the difference between what it means to internally regulate versus an external act of trying to control what's happening outside of you. And sometimes that can be tricky. It can look like regulation. And I don't know if I'd go as far as to say there are like two different types of people or two different types of approaches. I think in this group of you, Mom, Nicole, and myself, we fall more on the side of that suppression of self. That is our extreme. And then there are other people whose extreme is trying to shape outside circumstances, change the way that people behave. We're not really emotionally regulating. We're actually manipulating circumstances to soothe ourselves and feel more at ease. Like you don't trust necessarily that you can handle it on your own inside of yourself. And so you lean on the people around you to do it for you. And you know, it's hard sometimes to identify that that's what we're doing. And I think we all do a little bit of everything depending on the circumstances and who we're with. Did you want to say anything more on that, Mom, since that was a conversation we were having?
You're doing great, Julia. Keep going.
Well, that's all I have.
I think sticking to like the comfort, right? Trying to keep the other person comfortable or trying to keep the situation comfortable, that not revealing, not sharing, suppressing in order to keep the other person's emotions down, or like that you think they might get reactive if you share what is true for you. And so you just don't share what's true for you. But that lack of honesty corrodes the connection, the possibility of connection, the trust. And I don't know if this is getting a little too much, but like that word manipulation is a tricky one, right? Because we all kind of do it to an extent to survive. We're all like manipulating ourselves and our external spaces to fit our needs, to get our needs met, right? But can we be aware that we're doing that? Or like, what is the strategy I'm using to get whatever need met? Is it in awareness or out of awareness? What kind of intent is it with, you know, a malintent, or is it trying to cultivate more harmony? But even that's a slippery slope, right? Because if the goal is harmony, a lot of good can come out of conflict or friction, right? Disagreement doesn't have to be emotionally dysregulated, right? And so when we bump up against each other and have conflict or friction or tension, it's an opportunity to learn more about the other person and learn more about ourselves and deepen our relationship. So the more that we can be aware of ourselves, our experience, and our emotions, so the more regulated we can stay during conflict or misunderstanding or disagreement, the more successful we can be in navigating it and coming to an outcome that is perhaps mutually beneficial.
Yeah. And I think it's calling attention to it. Something that I do a lot with the 14-year-old, thinking about the idea that we all do use manipulation. She has this tone when she's really trying to get me to do something. And it's just the sweetest thing, you know? And so when she does it, sometimes I'll look at her and I'll say, I know that you're manipulating me and it's probably going to work this time. I want you to know that you're manipulating me, you know? And she'll go, no, I'm not. And I'll just kind of say, yes, you are. And in this instance, it's working, but let's make sure we don't manipulate for wrong reasons. And so that's just kind of a bar we try to set here. But I think some phrases and some words on its surface level, if you say to someone, we all do it or you're doing it, we immediately get pushback. And I think that dampens our ability to have self-awareness that we need so that we can really be self-regulated and, more importantly, be able to support children in co-regulating if we can begin to name behaviors and not judging.
Yeah. In what both of you are saying, it feels important to call out that these words often have dramatic implications or dramatic affiliations. You know, manipulation sounds big and scary and like only bad people do it. But these are really nuanced ideas and they show up in little ways just because we're human. And it's not, you know, to an extreme level where like it's movie villain stuff. We all do these things to protect ourselves, and that's just true. So I appreciate you kind of breaking that down there.
I love that, Julia. And I love what you're saying, Nicole, about naming. That feels so important. It helps to destigmatize. Julia, to your point about this word protection, we've become so protective of ourselves and our emotional safety. And we really operate out of a lot of fear. And the fear is, I don't want to hurt. I don't want to feel bad. I don't want to be uncomfortable. And so I think the more we can practice naming what is true, oh, this is happening right now. Let's notice that it's happening. Let's check out what's causing it to happen. Let's explore that. Let's not be so scared of it. We can have these kinds of conversations with curiosity and kindness. They don't have to be rooted in fear and anger and protection. But, you know, in our society, that's not something that's practiced, right? So everybody's kind of out to protect themselves. I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to get hurt. Breaking it down, naming it, repetition, getting feedback. Feedback can be really scary for people. But how can we share in an honest way, in a regulated way, in a seeking to understand as well as to be understood kind of way that leads to deepening of relationships?
So we've talked a lot about internal regulation and how our systems work, how we can support them, and that when we feel regulated, we're in a better position to nurture relationships. So let's shift into the exploration part of our conversation and talk a little bit more about these ripples, looking at the question, how might we help children co-regulate and what are some simple strategies that can help us?
Something I'm thinking about is sort of those ongoing daily practices. So it's the preventative as opposed to like in the moment. Both are important, but what can we do daily to practice self-connection and self-regulation? I think teaching children simple mindfulness strategies can be really useful. For example, if we're having some big emotions in a conversation, we could join together. I think about the word camaraderie. How can we work together and have camaraderie together? We're both trying to do the same thing here. So like, hey, let's take a breath together. You know, with a little person, really like say, let's sit down or do a stretch or get the wiggles out or something that is active. I know a little strategy is like, would you like to practice blowing out the birthday candle? Let's imagine there are three candles on this cupcake and take a big breath and blow out one of them. Now take a big breath and blow out another one. You know, and then take a breath and blow out the third one. So it gives their nervous system the chance to have that oxygen come in and help regulate physiologically, a togetherness activity of regulation. Maybe a teenager like, hey, let's pause together for just a moment and check in. I know with my kids, I would often ask them like, hey, could we do an inside check right now? Let's just all stop and check out what's happening inside of us. You know, where are you in this moment? What's important to you in this moment? What feelings are you experiencing in this moment? And I'm interested in them. Will you share with me where you are? And kind of what is your conscience saying? What are your insides telling you? And I'd love to hear about that.
Thank you for that phrasing of what is your inside telling you? I think that's such clear language we can use for children. So thank you for that.
I am thinking about another strategy that didn't really feel like a strategy when you first offered it to me when I was little, but the phrase, I'm always okay, or you are always okay. I even wrote a narrative essay about it when I was in college because I realized, looking back over my life, how big of an impact it had on my sense of internal regulation. It started out as this really confusing thing to hear. Like, what do you mean? I am not always okay. And I used to quiz you and say, well, what if this terrible thing happened? What if one of us went to jail? Or what if all of these horrible things went wrong? We wouldn't be okay then. And you would say, yeah, we would. We would be okay. And it really did not make sense. And with time, I would lean on it and started realizing I really am okay. No matter the circumstances, I'm here. Something might physically or emotionally hurt, but I am okay. And so kind of exploring what it meant to me and how I could use it to support me as a mantra was really helpful.
Can I tag onto that real quick? That you're okay stems from you can handle this. We can handle this. We are capable. No matter what comes at us, we can handle it. You know, I learned that from my dad. And he said, it'll be all right, Jen. It'll be all right, Jen. So it's okay. Mine was, it'll be all right, Jen. And the bottom line was, I can handle this. We can handle this together. Nothing is too big for us to handle. Like you said, it might hurt, might be uncomfortable, but we can handle it.
Thank you for saying that. I was like, oh, right, exactly. That's what it is. And there is a sense of empowerment that I often also notice my peers struggled with that. There wasn't a built-in sense of I've got this, that self-efficacy. You know, I felt like I watched a lot of friends feeling like they didn't have the foundation. They didn't have the trust in themselves. And for some reason, there were moments of insecurity, of course, all the time. But there was this very deep sense of I got it. I can handle it. So thank you for saying that. And then the other thing I'm thinking is, you know, the emotional contagion piece. They feed off of us and we feed off of them. And noticing when children are getting dysregulated, it actually impacts us too. And we often become dysregulated and model for them anxiety and like flailing, you know, trying to find our footing, but missing. And I think trusting that the grown-up could handle themselves. And so doing your own work to show up regulated helps children show up regulated. Just simple as that.
I think to add to that, Julia, exactly that word you used was trust, giving the child the message, I trust you. I trust you with your emotions, and I'm interested in your emotions, goes a long way to that. I believe in you. I believe you can handle this. And that is a deep-rooted sense of stability, grounded in self.
Yeah.
Perhaps the wrap-up is the question, what might the world look like with everyone using emotional regulation?
How I think the world could be shaped and looked differently if there was more intentional practice is that I think it would engender a sense of trust. We would not have to be so self-protective and fear-based, but there would be more openness and revealing. We would just have deeper, richer, more intimate relationships. I think for me, that word is so big because in my practice, the absence of that is often at the root of discontent, sadness, depression, anxiety, pain, you know, loneliness. I think we as humans do crave a depth of relationship that a lot of us don't really know how to engage in. We know we want something, but we don't know how to achieve it. I think there would be potential for a kinder, more collaborative. I don't know. I feel excited about the possibility of expansiveness in that we don't know. We don't know what could be possible if it happened, but the possibility feels very rich with potential and really good feelings.
When I think about a world where everyone was self-regulated, I think that it would be a world of more embracing of each other and seeing each other's humanity. I think there would be more empathy for others, because I really believe a lot of times we lack empathy because we're afraid of what we might lose if someone else gained. And I think that our children would grow up in a society where they receive messages of being capable, of being loved, of being cared for, of being smart. I just think that our children collectively, you know, across the world would have much more grounding in that those attachments that we know that they need and those models that we know that they need at a young age, that that's freely given.
I love both of your descriptions. And yeah, much of what I was thinking is reflected in what you both said. I think the last words I would add are like a gentleness or an ease about life. Like, I think we'd all just feel a little more calm, really leaning into living a life that feels well and connected, and where we have the space to really do the humanity first thing, to put humanity first. Thank you both for this really rich and uplifting conversation. I know I'm feeling really grateful to be with you both today. And for all of you listening in, I would like to bring us into the final part of our conversation, take action, and offer a question that you can ponder as you transition to the next part of your day. What is one relationship in your life that you would like to be more intentional about nurturing with emotional regulation? And what's a practice that you might have heard in this conversation that can support you with that? Many of us have had models of adults who have shown us what regulation looked like or didn't look like. And it really is a journey discovering the patterns that those experiences have led us to develop. So I invite you, whether you had that gold star model adult, or if you didn't, to be one for the children in your life, because humanity starts with each of us. Thank you so much for being a part of our community and listening to our show. Together, we're creating space to see more of each other and more of ourselves. Please subscribe to the Leading for Children podcast on your favorite streaming platform. You can also visit leadingforchildren.org to sign up for our newsletter and explore ways to get involved. Thank you for your commitment to shaping thriving communities for children. Wishing you optimism. Till next time.